Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It's Monday, the 21st of August at 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Welcome. Hope you're having a lovely start to the week, to the day, and we're going to have an eclipse in a little while. And I was noting how many times I was told today not to stare directly into the sun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amused.
Do you usually?
I'm amused that we have to remind people of that. But and don't breathe under the water.
That's true.
But
I think that has a little more immediate impact.
Little helpful hints.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's
don't
interesting
stare into the sun.
It's interesting because there are countries where they don't have TV. And people don't tell them not to look at the sun. You know what I mean? Don't you see?
Yeah, but we're not one of them.
No, that's exactly my point. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, it's lovely. Whatever we start to go see the eclipse today, and hopefully we'll get to see it. Do you remember the last time it came around? It was 1979, right? Yeah. All right, my headphones just went down.
That's right after I moved here.
40. Just trying to figure out how old I was.
How old you were during that eclipse?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Neither do
I. I can't do that.
It's
math.
High math.
Yeah,
38
is.
Minus 38 of what you are now.
Is in 24. How old will you be then?
What'd you say?
The next one.
Don't know that either.
2024. So that's how many years from now? That's 18, 19, 20, 20. 7 years from
now.
Thank you very much, Teresa.
Seven.
I would take it.
Very helpful.
My father was a math teacher.
I'll take it.
But it won't be like this one. This one, the last one like this one, is 99 years ago.
Yeah,
I believe.
In the U.S.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's
the Via Totality.
Fascinating stuff. So
drive quick if you want to get to Totality.
All that'll be going. God, I want to get to Totality. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I just want to announce that I was at Tanglewood. I know Libby was there, too, and watching film night. And I just want to report to everybody that John Williams, when he got introduced, he got standing ovation.
It was lovely.
He got a standing ovation every time, you know. He was finished with a piece. Anders Nelsons conducted the first half. They clearly adore each other, these guys. And Nelsons, in the big surprise of the evening, remember, Joe, when we interviewed him about his trumpet playing and how
trumpet.
He hadn't played for 16 years? And he got up and he played the most remarkable trumpet solo during the Lincoln piece, which announced by Williams, and the two men embraced. It was really quite something.
It was lovely.
I was talking to Tony Fogg last night, who's the director of the festival, and he said to me that they were worried that Andres would lose his like right up to the last minute could possibly lose his nerve to do it. But came out and just knocked it out of the park.
You know, we were sitting on the lawn watching on the screen, and they did all the close-ups of him. It was great.
Very cool.
It was just wonderful.
Very, very fun. They had a huge crowd, too. They were saying. I think they said they even believe it may have
So you and old Tony, you talk on the phone?
I was over there last night to introduce David Sedaris.
Oh, yeah.
How'd
that go?
It went great, and it was a lot of fun, a wonderful crowd, a lot of WAMC love, and it was very, very nice. We had he is remarkable, just very funny, and put on a beautiful show. So it was a very nice evening. Let me also introduce you to political consultant Libby Post, who is here. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
And communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Very
well,
nice.
Well, but when
you
said, let me introduce Libby Post, she gave what I would call 1 to 10, a 3 in terms of a reaction like, good morning. You know, it didn't sound like...
Was muted?
It didn't sound like she actually wanted to be here.
Oh, no, I want to be here. I'm just a little tired. I went to New York. After that lovely evening in Tanglewood, we went to New York yesterday, and I saw Beautiful on Broadway, and it was
nice.
Great.
And it was beautiful.
Oh, my God.
That
was great.
All right, let's get started. We'll talk about what's happening in the world. And, there's a bunch of things that I want to... that we want to talk about today, and of course the missing sailors is a huge story, and I want to talk about that, but we went off the air at noon or for the panel, 10:30 on Friday. And then after that, the story that we, I think we were just waiting for happened, which was Steve Bannon was fired, resigned, a combination of both, whatever the case may be.
Shown the door.
Shown the door. And so I think we will begin there in sort of do chronological order as to the news and since the last time we spoke. And Steve Bannon goes, and the reporting in the New York Times now says that this was something that was actually worked out for a while. They were working on an amicable departure. And then Charlottesville happened, and then sort of all hell broke loose. And at that point, because, again, according to the reporting in the New York Times, when General Kelly, John Kelly, came in as the new White House chief of staff, the first thing he told Steve Bannon is, you have to go.
The military are running the country right now. And I think people will probably be appreciative that they are.
I think that there's some sort of stability is what people are hoping for. And while we understand the long-term effects of this, nobody really thinks politically long term, so they're like, "Thank God, there's an adult in the room."
Yeah.
So, what do you make? Let's begin with what you make of how the White House will now be changed and any different without Steve Bannon in the White House.
Well, I say, never put a Bannon in the refrigerator.
Bannon.
A banana.
Oh,
a
banana.
Yeah, like a chicken banana.
I was going to Danny.
Am I right? Am I
yeah,
that where you were headed?
Exactly
okay.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, okay.
Married
right.
too long. Go ahead.
Well, I got to say that Teresa didn't laugh. And when Teresa doesn't laugh, you're in big trouble.
And you know it's not funny.
Okay, so do you want to continue with your your insights?
Yeah.
Minus fruit.
I couldn't perhaps resist, well on my new diet I can. but I can say that
cucumbers are a fruit.
Cucumbers are all right, but you're allowed
to tomatoes are fruit.
I know that.
But on the 30 day, the whole 30.
Let's get back to Steve Bannon.
But on Steve Bannon, he really was played a role of a great dissembler in the White House. It was so bad that what is most terrible about the whole thing is that Trump listened to him and listened to him all the way. So till the day he leaves, Trump is following his basic instructions. I think now that the army is in charge, you're going to find that Trump's numbers may go up just slightly. It may be too late because people have an impression now of him. But I think that they're going to go up because he's not going to be tweeting every morning, I'm sure. In the same way he fired Bannon and in the same way he has operated right from the beginning, you're going to see fewer tweets from Trump.
Why do you think that?
Because I think he is going to give over the running of the government to the generals who he has hired.
Oh, I think he'll continue to tweet.
Well, so far, for whatever it's worth, we're really not seeing the same, provocativeness, imbecility, childness that he has displayed before.
He can't spell heel, but that's okay.
that was great. but if that were true, then I mean, if Kelly had an influence up until even last week, we could have avoided the tweets having to do with the Charlottesville incident.
He was just doing. Trump was just enjoying himself while Bannon was getting out the door. But I don't see the same level. You're exactly right, Joe. You're exactly right about that. We saw the pictures of General Kelly standing there with his arms folded across his chest, looking really dour. But I'm sure there were arrangements made when he agreed to take over the running of the White House, which were that he was going to be in charge. I really believe that.
Do you think it's fair to say that Bannon got him elected?
Well, Bannon certainly thinks he got him elected. Trump has been trying to put some distance between himself. Look, he had that base in those three states, which all, by the way, all of the polls are showing this morning, he's underwater in, and big time underwater. So as of today, he doesn't win the next election, depending, of course, on who the candidate, the Democratic candidate, is going to be. Now, I am reluctantly coming to the point of view that it was Hillary that done him, that did the Democrats in, that they were Clintoned out, people were Clintoned out, that they had had enough. Now, I know the people in this room, you know, for the most part, think highly of her. So do I. I've interviewed her a number of times, and I know how bright she is. But I don't think that that is an answer to what people are thinking about, were thinking about the Clintons in the election. So, for whatever it's worth, you're looking crossly at me, Teresa.
Well, I just, I profoundly disagree with you, but I want to stay focused on Trump. I don't
No, but I mean, I think Trump
Hillary
is...
Clinton. I just fundamentally disagree with you
okay.
on that. As you indicated, I would.
Yeah, I'd love to know why. but the way that it looks to me is Trump has done something here which will help him. He got rid of Bannon. He got rid of all those other guys who were around the table. The networks can't get enough, so did the New York Times, of putting all the people who came with him and how they disappeared one by one from the thing. And now the general is in charge.
We'll see if this is true, if Steve Miller and Gorka are out.
Well, Gorka's out.
Well, we'll see. I haven't seen him.
No, it's indisputable. Gorka's going to be out.
Well, and then Steve Miller's got to go, too.
Right.
Yes, he's pretty bad.
Yep.
Because, you know, Bannon may no longer, you know, have his pass to get in, but he still is a phone call away. And he's now back at Breitbart. And Steve Miller's still writing the words. So in terms of setting the tone with Trump, I don't think he's gone that far. And you know, at Breitbart, he has a pretty big megaphone, and let's see what else he does. I mean, my sense is they said there's something next that Mercers are going to heavily invest in. I assume it's going to be television.
Well, I profoundly disagree with you. That was only in kind, as you know.
But
only because I think that the general is going to have, you say he writes, Miller writes the words, I think that that stuff is going to go by the general.
Well,
so.
I mean, I think the key will be is does Miller go? Because Gorka's got to go.
I mean, he's, that's what he's, I said.
But does Miller go? And because they need somebody else in there to write the words.
So Bannon referred to the Democratic forces within the White House. We assume that meant Ivanka and Jared Kushner, who are, you may know, related to the President of the United States.
You can call them Democrats.
Well, right. So, but it doesn't seem like they have had, obviously they're the ones who stay, but what is the influence? What has the influence been? And what will the influence continue to be on the family members who have offices right next to the president?
I don't get the point. The point is we know they didn't like him, right? We know that that they're not being dismissed, so their power has been increased by the diminishment of Bannon. And I don't think, by the way, that Bannon can stop himself from attacking the president.
Just like Trump can't stop himself, and I think
Well, Bannon doesn't have a general sitting up.
I know, but you know, look at that picture of Bannon, of Kelly from that press conference. He could have, if he really had the ability to stop this man, that press conference would never have gone off the rails the way it did.
And so because it's Donald Trump.
Right. He's the one who gets up there. He has absolutely no discipline. He is just impulsive and impetuous, and whatever he wants.
See, I profoundly disagree. I think...
We're all profound this morning.
I think... this was the last hurrah for Trump as Bannon was leaving the fold. And I think Bannon was still whispering in his ear, and he was still listening to Bannon. And I think the general knew what was going to happen on his way in. In other words, this was not as if he was hearing the words for the first time and didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. He did know.
Well, I think I have a headline here. The Washington Post: Bannon's departure has huge implications for the U.S.-China relationship, and that one of the things he was doing was trying to shift the way we interact with China. And so I think things like that may change. I think the generals will be effective in changing that. I'm not sure who takes over focusing on the various deregulatory efforts that he was leading, if that slows down at all. But in terms of the caustic rhetoric, I think he and Donald Trump were quite in sync on the caustic rhetoric, the post-Charlottesville mm-hmm. type rhetoric. And so I think that some of the policy that is not getting attention might change or slow down or shift. Certainly, I think the U.S.-China policy will change probably for the better. But in terms of the caustic rhetoric, I think that that's who Trump is. And I think that O'Bannon helped him figure out how to, he helped create a megaphone for that. And that megaphone will continue at Breitbart.
I think I don't agree with that. I think Trump is a sort of unfilled vessel intellectually. He doesn't have any real great substance. He's been all over the place. He's been for Democrats. He's given money to He's given money to everybody and all the rest of it.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, and I think what happens is that if he comes within a stronger force than his own, who he thinks will do the work for him, he tends to subscribe to that.
Well, he definitely likes being around the generals. I mean, that gives him his macho.
Well, he appointed
bread.
Them. Yeah.
You know, he definitely likes that. But we have to remember, so the question is then, was Steve Bannon the one behind the birther, or was that Trump and Trump alone, going forth with the whole birther movement, because he really riled that up and he gave it voice?
Well, he claims that Bannon wasn't on the scene till late in the game, so would have been Trump.
So then,
So he's not so empty. Force. What'd you say?
He's not so empty. He's not so much of an empty vessel.
No, he's empty because you go you go with whatever the stronger force is around you. Now, we don't know who those people were at the time, but he's empty.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have letters. We have more, many, many, many more topics to discuss as well. We will be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. It's very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the panel. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Keep them brief, keep them to the point, and send them to the right address.
And what is that address?
It's panel at WAMC.org. Thank you for asking.
No problem.
Let's go to a couple of them.
Okay, just a few because we don't have that much time. George says, the people who don't have TV or radio or internet to tell them not to look at the sun will probably think the world is ending anyway. And then there's this. Dear God, and we've gotten this 25 times already, all of us have, if you want Donald Trump impeached, please give us a sign and block out the sun today.
Yes.
George.
That's making its rounds on Facebook.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, yeah. And Don, our very good friend, professor and comedian, with or without Bannon, the biggest problem in the White House is Trump. And that's from Don. And then we've heard from Zach, who says, everyone assumes Trump's white supremacist tendencies, including his reaction to Charlottesville, are Bannon doing. But if Bannon leaves, the worldview doesn't leave with him. Trump has always had these leanings himself. How many times was he sued for housing discrimination? And then we heard from Rick with Dawn. Good morning, panel. On this beautiful sunny morning, Alan said something very telling this morning. He said, since the generals have taken over, I've been saying this for quite a while, that this whole Trump campaign has made us ripe for a military coup. By the way, Rick and Dawn, I said so too. Let's all stay sharp. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a parliamentary system in America and we could have a vote of no confidence and call for new elections? Just saying. Have a great day. Rick in Woodstock. Okay. And Diana said, the Republican machine relentlessly dumped on Hillary from the time she worked on health care and Bill's administration. Long ago, they saw her as a threat, a potential presidential candidate. Sure, she had flaws, but more than 20 years of Republicans trashing her, and she still won the 2016 popular vote.
I agree with that, indeed. And the Mercers, who are funding Bannon and Breitbart now, for more than a decade, they funded a whole series of efforts to go after her. The most prominent one was a movie called Clinton Cash that was, you know, filled with errors.
Okay, but still politics.
Propaganda.
Still the way they do it. Some can answer. We saw at least one presidential candidate, John Kerry, not properly handling what was thrown at him. Some people can, some people can't. I'm not arguing that Trump should have won. I'm just arguing that there was a significant anti-Hillary vote in this election, for whatever reasons, Teresa. And now let me read this letter, if I may, from Gordon, who says, with all due respect to my good friend Teresa, you know Gordon?
I may. I know a Gordon.
Oh. Never mind. With all due respect to my good friend Teresa, I think there was a significant anti-Clinton vote in 2016. I have been a Clinton supporter even 9 years ago in the primary against Obama. But I think if Joe Biden had been running, Trump would not be the president.
Well, I don't agree that Biden would have won. And I do think, obviously, there was a significant anti-Clinton vote, and I think people were weary and they stayed home. But what was the cause of that? How much was it the Russian interference propaganda? How much was it the tamping down the vote? How much was it the, you know, 10 plus years of the Mercers and others, or 20 years of attacking her? But
much was it just plain old sexism?
How much was it?
Was some of that. There's no question about it.
I think it was a combination of things, some of which we don't have a full understanding of yet. But do I think that Bernie Sanders, I think Bernie Sanders didn't help her. I think that he
No, you think more than that. I think Bernie Sanders killed her.
No, I think he hurt her, and I think that he exacerbated the did-not-vote group of people. And I think that right now I'm concerned about them, you know, pushing I'm all for progressive candidates, but progressive candidates are not going to win in swing districts. And so I am concerned about the Sanders movement, pushing progressive candidates in districts that are swing districts that they can't win in. And I'd rather see them be pushing more moderate candidates who can win, because ultimately the key is to win
The
House and the Senate, yes.
At the risk of alienating our base, I agree with you.
Anyway, but on to other
issues. The issue that I want to talk about next, of course, is the president is going to speak to the nation tonight in his first televised address. And this primetime address, I should say. And this is regarding, at least from what we are told, regarding our policy in Afghanistan. He has been accused by lawmakers of dragging his feet on Afghanistan. He has settled on a new strategy to carry on the nearly 16-year-old conflict there. The move, following a detailed review, is likely to open the door to the deployment of several thousand troops. The president has made a decision, according to Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and I am very comfortable that the strategic process was sufficiently rigorous. The White House said in a statement that Mr. Trump would address the American public and American troops on a path forward for America's engagement in Afghanistan and South Asia in a speech at Fort Myer, Virginia.
Where did this come from? Which newspaper? The Times?
This is the Times.
Yeah. Well, okay. So when you all first heard that the president was going to make his first ever primetime speech, now be honest with me, what was the first image that came into your mind?
Why the dog?
Lyndon Johnson told the nation, remember, and in Vietnam, and he ended by saying, for that reason.
wouldn't that be nice?
For that reason, yeah, I will not stand for re-election.
I will not accept, that time. Nor shall I.
Well, then remember, the guy's 74, the guy will be 74.
That's not going to happen.
What'd you say?
That's
not
more likely there'll be an eclipse than that'll happen.
Another one.
By the way, I agree with you. Again, unfortunately.
So,
I agree with you.
Washington
Why
Post.
Is that unfortunate?
Well, because I don't like to agree with her.
Republicans.
It's not good radio.
A Republican strategist who's worked in the White House, this is from the Washington Post, said, quote, "The address is designed to turn the page from the Charlottesville chaos and remind voters that Trump is commander-in-chief and has made an informed and responsible decision."
Right. Well, the military made the decision. Again, it's proof that the generals are in charge.
Also, I think the timing, I mean, this is the pre-budget activities that happens, you know, just before their budget decisions. You're going to see a lot of this. You're going to see the military flexing their muscle. You're going to see, this is where everybody, just before the Congress has to make big budget decisions, you see a lot of activity. But just remember that this is being done in the backdrop of no U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan in place, no Assistant Secretary for South and Central Asian Affairs in place. And so these key decisions are being made without the a core diplomatic entourage in place to help make these decisions.
If you were the president, what would you do about Afghanistan? I'm talking to you, not her. Talking to you,
oh,
Teresa.
I would increase the special ops folks, and I would train forces, and I would put a ton of money into educating girls and children. I put my resources into educating people and special ops.
And that would stop the Taliban?
I think this educating the girls in the long term will have an impact on stopping the Taliban if they don't kill the girls. As we've seen them do. You know, I wonder if they're just going to privatize this war.
Well, that was the Bannon plan.
That was the Bannon plan. They rejected that.
The Bannon plan was to give it all. What's the name of that corporation? Was it Blackwater?
Blackwater, Betsy Foss's brother.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
They're not Blackwater anymore, but that's essentially who they are.
Yeah. Well, you know, that there was a really scary idea. Mm-hmm. Really scary. You know, what are we looking at here? We're looking at the generals doing what they've always done. They want to run conventional wars. They want to use their weapons. They don't want to bring them home. But what I would trust the panel here to do, because that's why you're here, is to give us some answers, Libby and Teresa. What exactly would you do?
What would I do?
Yes.
As the commander of the Joint Chief of Staff.
That's why you're here, solving a 16-year-long military crisis.
Right. I mean, we have to remember that the public...
What's the matter with you?
Right. The public didn't have much of a taste or appetite for Afghanistan or
Nor did the
Iraq.
Russians.
Right. Well, they did. But
They had it, but then they were out because they realized
because
that
we
this
went
was
in, but in 1980, and, you know, But the fact, whenever that was, yeah, it was 1980. But the fact of the matter is that the American people, you know, here's what's going to happen. Okay, so we're going to go into this war, and I've said this
before. 4,000 soldiers,
right? And they're all going to be soldiers of color, or working class white folks who have enlisted because they have no other choice. And so I've said this before. There's this combination of forces going on here, where Steve Bannon might be gone, but I do have no doubt of Trump's racial politics. And so here he's sending all of these kids of color and working class white people who he doesn't care about to war to be killed. And then on the other hand, they wanted to cut everyone's health care.
I want to remind you, so will you stand for just an observation and then go back? But I want to remind you, Libby, that Bannon was against sending troops to Afghanistan.
Right, I get that. I get that. I understand that. But I also think that there's a part of him and a part of the racist thought in this country is let them go fight our wars for us. And that's what has happened. Our military, you know, is not a draft. And I'm not advocating a draft. But the people who end up going into the military because they have no other choice and there's no other financial means are poor people.
No question.
And I get that. And
why aren't you advocating?
But they're going to go out and fight this war for rich people for who knows who's going to get rich off of this war.
Well, why aren't you advocating a draft? You know, Charlie Rangel.
Because I don't think we should be there to begin with.
Charlie Rangel, who said some brilliant things in his life. He was for the legalization or the non-criminalization of drugs in a terrible time. He was also for a draft. Because
he
thought people would in fact understand what we were into under that kind of a circumstance. And I think he was right. Of course, the powers that be went through Vietnam, and they knew darn well they weren't going to be causing that kind of reflection on where we were and what we were doing.
Well, I think you said it, Teresa, the best.
I'm sorry. I have to.
Okay.
I have to pause you all because we're 3 minutes late for break. So let's go take the break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation on this. Alan's got some letters, and then I want to talk about the unfortunate collision that we're still trying to figure out this morning. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. And we, just a reminder, a friendly reminder, don't stare at the sun. Just a reminder.
And
in case no one else has told you today, during the eclipse, don't stare at the sun.
That's S-U-N.
Yeah.
And remind your friends, but, you know.
Remind your friends.
Remind
that's
your
right.
Friends.
Isn't that would be a nice public service.
Friends
just
family,
remind your
or
friends
anyone
and
you think
family.
Who might not know.
Hey, Bob, don't stare at the sun.
Well, you could make a box. You said you made a box when you were a kid.
Yeah,
right?
Out of the cereal box.
Roselle's
right?
already done it.
Hole in it, and then yeah.
Go on the NASA channel. NASA website has all sorts of stuff. They'll tell you how to print a 3D one. They'll show you how to make one out of
just
a cereal
some
box.
Some very cool stuff.
I'm telling you, stay inside. Don't fool around. Watch it on television.
Stop, and just keep your pets inside.
That's right.
Yes.
What
you
about
moose
and cows?
Inside.
Oh yeah.
And horses.
What about the pets?
Yeah, you gotta keep your dog inside.
Murray.
So your dog. So you don't want Murray looking at the sun.
Right. Right.
You think Murray would look at the sun?
No.
You never know.
Well, because, you know, you can get your eye. Am I wrong on this? This is one of the many things I could be wrong about. Correct me, which I know you're wrong.
Astounding. Just astounding.
If you look directly at the sun at any point, you could damage your eye.
Well,
yes. You can.
But there's not usually a nest. There's not.
Right.
Well, I could use one
or
of those
beer.
Right now, actually.
And some lime, yes.
Bartender. There isn't the reason, right? I mean, we wouldn't normally need to stare at the sun.
Well,
we hear there's actually something to see because the.
But don't you think all these years of evolution have trained us not to look at the sun?
Well, that's right. My point. I think it's kind of silly to tell us to tell people to not stare at the sun. But
we
still have to tell people not to drive during a blizzard too.
Right.
But.
It's not all these years of evolution. It's all these years of Jewish mothers saying, "Don't look at the sun."
Well, Libby, that's a little.
That's
a little strange.
Honey, don't look at the sun. You'll ruin your eyes. You're already wearing glasses. Can you imagine the magnifying of the sun? And I mean, really?
That's funny.
Well, you have an eye doctor coming on, right?
We do. Thank you, Teresa. At 2 o'clock today, we're going to have a Vox Pop, and we'll have an eye doctor on talking about
all the damage that was done.
But we
by
didn't do it on purpose. It was just purely accidental. That's the way it worked out.
Just say you did do it on purpose.
It's
go
a
with
wonderful
it.
Thing.
So are we still on Afghanistan?
We can be. Yeah, you were making a point on Afghanistan, so I hope that you go back to your point.
Well, I don't remember that point, but...
Would you like to make a new one?
I have two others.
Okay, great. Let's go with those.
One is the interesting backstory, General John Nicholson, who's the commander of the American.
Right.
He has a fascinating backstory, and that does give me some comfort, even though there aren't enough diplomats in the conversation. He seems like somebody who's been at this a long time, and he's been in Afghanistan. This is his third tour.
And he said.
And so he presumably is going along with this. But his interesting backstory on him is that his office, 9/11 plane goes into the Pentagon, his office completely destroyed. He would have been killed had not he had the day off. He was moving, got a new house. He was moving. And just by coincidence, he survived because he was not in the office that day.
I thought, Teresa, with all due respect, you were going to say what he said. And what he said was, we're in a stalemate.
Oh, yes, he did say we're in a stalemate.
And that's the important part of the Nicholson story, right?
Well, that's, you know, well, presumably he'll now say we're going to come out of the stalemate.
With another 4,000 soldiers, we're going to make a difference in the Taliban blowing things up and going around and being who they are.
And some people say that's absolute hogwash. But the
question
is tonight, will they get NATO, which he has had a background in involvement with NATO, will they get more NATO to put in more troops, and will more troops do it? But the other thing that's interesting that I think is very frightening is that Trump has this notion that there are minerals And Reuters had a story out last night. The victor, the spoils, Trump sees Afghanistan's elusive mineral riches. And that he has this notion that he will...
Someone's going to make money.
That they're going to make money off of this. And that's why he's decided to reverse his position. I don't know if this is true, but that's what's reported, that he is going to reverse his position about having more troops go in because he sees the mineral wealth there and thinks he can get some of it, which is just hideous.
I predict at the end of his speech tonight, he's going to say, for that reason, I will not run again for president of the United States.
I hope he says that.
Now think, if it turns out that I'm right about this, I will be profoundly aggressive about beating my chest and saying, see, I told you that was going to happen. Now, the odds are not good. Let's say 99-1. But like my prediction on the presidency, all kinds of people will be writing and say, you didn't really say that. I said it. Write it down.
Okay.
$117 billion we've invested in, or I wouldn't call it invested, spent.
In what?
Afghanistan over the last 16 years.
Well, yeah. And by the way, we have to be fair. Obama didn't fare too well either, right? In terms of...
He drew down troops.
In terms of his strategy.
But he did draw down troops, as he said he would.
But he continued to put people into that
war.
They
had to go back and forth, right?
Yes.
I mean, you know.
Come on. Sure. As Joe said, he had to go back and forth.
Meaning there was a drawdown, but then there were more added later.
Right.
Right. Okay. So let us, you have some letters there, Alan. Let's
do that
before we go to the break.
Okay, I'll be glad to do that. Narcissa says, hello, Roundtable. I was startled to hear today that Alan, of all people, is pitching the story that there is a better Trump out there. Yes, you merely mean one submissive to the generals, but still it's the same old media story that Trump really isn't quite that bad. There's always an excuse for this man. I don't get it. No, there's no better Trump. He's always been this awful. He always will be. It was the mass media refusal to accept this point that got him elected, pure and simple. Narcissa, I'd like to argue with you a little bit. I was not saying, pitching the story, there's a better Trump out there. Not at all. I say the generals are going to run things, and he's given it over to the generals. I don't think it's a better Trump at all. I completely agree with you. I think he's an empty vessel.
I was interested to hear Peggy Noonan, who was Reagan's speechwriter. Mm-hmm. She was on this weekend, and they were asking, did he lose his moral authority? And she said, no, he never had moral authority.
Right. Yeah.
And I agree with that. I thought it was interesting that she was so blunt on that point.
And Kathleen says, hello, panel. If the generals, you know, let me go back to that. You know, I think that there's Peggy Noonan is representative of the class of old style Republicans who really want stuff done. They want a change in the tax code. They want stuff that will revert to their real base, to the economic base. So I'm not surprised to see Noonan doing this again and again.
But I also, even though I disagree with her philosophy, you know, her policies, I do think she has a fundamental respect for the presidency and the position and the role and, mm-hmm. and as she was talking about in the power of words, and that is offended by how Trump and his ilk are demeaning the presidency.
But Teresa, I know I'm interrupting, but only because we have a minute to go. If you really heard George 1 and 2 talking to each other on the telephone, I think you would find that their feelings about the Trump presidency are equal to Noonan's.
Yeah.
And Steve Schmidt and Anna Navarro and anybody.
Sure. Romney's statement was incredibly powerful.
Right. Anyone who cares about the survival of the party.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Kathleen says, if the generals are truly in charge, we will see more State Department hiring, a recess period for the destruction of the EPA, and a reversal of many other... Oh, will we see a recess period for the destruction of the EPA and reversal of many other Bannon initiatives?
We'll see.
Well, I was looking at the Military Times because I was trying to understand what happened with this... we're going to talk about it later with the ship, the McCain. And I was interested.
That's a newspaper, the Military Times.
I'm sorry, Military Times is a newspaper. You can get it online. It's very interesting. And they have a headline, Top Pentagon. 74% of the top Pentagon posts are still vacant. Hmm. So State Department and Pentagon.
Let's take a break. Ray Graff is ready to deliver us news.
Ray. I bet he'll say.
Ray, don't stare at the sun. Please. We need you.
Tell your children, your
you
dog.
You just had eye work done. Please, don't stare at the sun.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We'll get to your letters in just a moment. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the panel this morning. I do want to get to the top news story of the day, which is rescuers seek 10 missing sailors after U.S. Navy ship and tanker collide. Search teams scrambled this morning to determine the fate of 10 missing Navy sailors after a U.S. destroyer collided with an oil tanker off the coast of Singapore, the second accident involving a Navy ship and a cargo vessel in recent months. The guided missile destroyer, the John S. McCain, was passing east of the Strait of Malacca on its way to a port in Singapore at 5:24 a.m. local time before dawn broke when it collided with the Alnick MC, a 600-foot vessel that transports oil and chemicals, according to the Navy. The destroyer was damaged near the rear on its port or left-hand side. And no word yet, but some sailors have called on cell to families. And again, 10 sailors missing in this collision. And as we mentioned before, this unfortunately has not been the only collision that we've had during this summer. So we look to the overall question of how do we avoid these from happening again.
Well, you know, I I know that this sounds a little conspiracy theorist, and I hate going there, but you know, two of these in just a few months, and there were two others in the last couple of years. This is, all of these ships are all computer-based and they have all these redundancies, and I can't help but think about cyber terrorism and that may just be what's going on here.
And we don't know.
No, we don't know.
We don't know. Teresa?
Yeah, well, that's as soon as I read this story, I was thinking, can we email Malcolm and ask him if it's a possibility that this could be cyber, because it's so unusual. And as Libby said, these ships have a lot of technology in them, a lot of redundancies. There's human watch, you know, people watching, and then there's also lots of technology. Or it could just be a horribly tragic situation, you know, two one after another. This one, I mean, yet again, 10, 12 soldiers, you know, missing. I mean, the other one I think was 12. This is 10.
Yes.
But I think, well, obviously they're going to need to, I don't know if it's even possible that it could be cyber issues. So I do hesitate to raise it, as Libby said, too. But it just seems rather odd.
Of course, anything is possible. Mm-hmm. When you think about it, you know, this, we're engaging in this kind of stuff. Other people are engaging in this kind of stuff. You got satellites up in the sky that can see everything that moves.
Right.
And I must say, I was thrown off because when Joe read the piece, I was watching it very early this morning on the TV. It was interesting that I had the impression it was on the right-hand side of the ship going forward, but maybe it's just the way that it appeared, because you read left. Not that it matters. It happened.
I'm reading right. As reported. This is according to Navy officials.
Yeah. Huh. Well, it's a terrible tragedy. There are 10 families that will be grieving. You would hope that we could do better with the billions, and I say billions with a B, that have been invested into this technology, into these ships.
Right. And I was just reading one of the quotes in the story from one of the experts. He said, it's really hard to understand with all the technology that's out there in the world on a boat, especially Navy destroyer that's supposed to be the best in the world, that this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But thoughts and prayers with the families. This just must be tragic for them.
It just doesn't make sense. I mean, I worked with the Port of Albany for close to 15 years, and this was a while ago, and those ships were, you know, run well. There had been some accidents, but the computerization of those ships, and either people are really asleep at the wheel, literally.
That's a possibility.
Right. Or there's something going on.
But as Teresa says, there's so many backup systems.
Right.
So
well, that's
I
what
mean,
I'm so talking
you know,
about.
It's just it is hard to believe that when you have all of these checks and balances that they all give way.
You know,
and this
what,
isn't
you
daylight.
Know, like, from the day that the internet was created, there were evil monsters who were thinking, I want to be one step ahead of where this whole thing is.
And again,
is.
We don't know
and they're doing it.
Perpetuate anything. But again, it is it's one of the questions to be asked. Mm-hmm. Because here again, much like the admonishment of don't look at the sun, here's another one. The ocean is very big.
Right.
And I read this morning that there are 80,000 ships a year going through that passage. 80,000.
Right. And it does say that it's very busy lanes and it's a very narrow strait and there aren't a lot of options. Mm-hmm.
But you would think they would know that going into it.
Right. And this was in daylight. I mean, the blessing of this is...
Well, just before dawn.
Before dawn. But unlike the previous one, the people on the ship were up. They were not in those compartments sleeping. And so that apparently saved lives. But I think we're going to need to learn more on this. And perhaps it was just a coincidence and a terribly tragic accident. But
we have letters. Let's get to those as we have our final moments here on the program.
Okay.
Don't look at the sun.
Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's always sexism with Libby. 53% of women voted for Trump, and that's Bob.
Right, and it's, you know, there's a thing called internalized homophobia, and I think there's a thing called internalized misogyny. So thanks, Bob.
Well, what does that mean?
Internalized homophobia is, you know, gay people who hate themselves for being gay. And I think that there are women out there who can't stand the notion of women succeeding to the highest levels of government and the highest levels of everything.
Well,
and
it's true that the EPA went
in. Yeah, and they voted against their own interests.
Well, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people voted against their own interests, but a number of people that I talked to were discouraged. We're just because of the email issue and because there were all this, they just thought there's going to be more and more litigation and it would just go on and on and on and on and on. And they were weary. And what they were weary of is all of these attacks on her, you know, most of which turned out to be groundless. But that's what they were weary of. And I don't think it was any, you know, I think it's just that they were tired.
You know, I don't know, Teresa. If you look at Michelle and Barack Obama coming out the way they did, and as vigorous, who were very popular at the end, and talking about Trump, and he's not going to be president of the United States. They said, and when they go low, we go high. And they did all of that stuff. It's not as if the Hillary stuff was going, you know, without any kind of reaction from the Democratic establishment. It just didn't do it.
And well, what's interesting is that the email stuff, like, you know, the October surprise, Comey really had a role to play in Trump getting elected.
And then
he gets fired because...
He's unstable because Trump's unstable. Okay, here we go. Many people voted for Trump and Bernie out of a frustration with a gridlocked political system. A major source of that gridlock is the practice of rigging election district boundaries, gerrymandering. How can this problem be addressed? Well, we're all sitting on pins and needles waiting for the Supreme Court of the United States to make a decision as to whether they're going to go there.
One thing is people could vote. I mean, the did not vote party is the party that won.
Absolutely. You're exactly right. And there was Trump up there saying, you know, to people of color, you know, that they had nothing to lose. Extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And,
and
you don't need everybody to understand that, to believe that. But suppose there was 5% of the people. That's an election. You had 175,000 votes, which won this election. All right. In the courts, specifically state courts, I say the Supreme Court, the right to vote is a state right found in every constitution, and gerrymandering violates the equal protection of that right. It is, if the clear and affirmative right to vote is found in state constitutions, that's the place to make the case, at least the state level, and that's from Robert in Scotia. Robert, I think any place you can make it is good, but I do think it's going to be made in the Supreme Court.
I was thinking of all those people marching yesterday, and are they all enrolled, registered to vote? Do they have their IDs? Are they using all that energy to get other people registered to vote and with their IDs? I mean, you saw in the recent election in Alabama, a number of people couldn't vote. They were listed as inactive because they had, quote unquote, cleansed the rolls.
Yeah, but that racist chief judge who they kicked out is going to win the election.
He's going to be the new senator, yeah, Roy Moore.
Yeah. Good morning, panel. This is the big division for Democrats. Get elected or be a Democrat? What progressive Democrats are saying is that you can't be both. Democrats cannot throw women under the bus in order to get Democrats elected in a conservative place. If you vote the so-called independent Democrats into office, there goes pro-choice, and that's from Naomi. Well, Teresa, I know you've been on this one. You say?
I say that you have to figure out who in districts can win, and in marginal districts, you know, far-left candidates can't win.
I agree with you.
And I say abortion is not a far-left issue.
No, but here's what, Libby, I do believe Teresa's right on this one. If you don't get those 218 votes in the House of Representatives, you know, you're doomed to really bad decisions, as we see with Congressman Ryan all along.
Look at the budget. You know, we're in the next month or so, we're going to have a budget that's passed, and you have Trump. I mean, just look at it. I still can't get over this report. 100,000 homeless children in New York City. Report came out the other day.
I just want to read this one. Dan said, for starters, they're sailors, not soldiers. Navy ships should not collide with anything. As a retired Navy captain, the bridge watch should always be alert and situationally aware. The watch should not rely solely on technology. Well, we don't know that it was, right? We don't know that it was certainly.
No, if it wasn't just technology, that's a serious problem. And I apologize about the soldiers and sailors. I know better than that, and I made
that
mistake.
Course.
Sorry
about that. Thomas says, war has not served this country well since World War II, particularly in the Middle East. Time is to come home. Let the quagmire sort itself out, from Tom. And when you see women being, you know, mutilated in a street, Tom, and on American television, and people crying and saying, how could we allow this to happen? You understand how politicians react, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Treating women as chattel.
Yeah. Reed says,
has its consequences.
Reed says, I disagree with the premise that a progressive candidate like Bernie Sanders can't win in a general election. He brought a sizable group of independent voters into the fold who've been alienated by the special interest-driven campaigns on both sides in the past, who ended up voting for Trump, and when it looked like the special interest put their thumb on the scale when Hillary was nominated. Regardless of where the next Democratic candidate is on the political spectrum, if he or she runs a campaign funded only by individual donations and highlights, this will be successful, and that's from Reed. I'm going to say, I think Bernie could have won. I announced that I was going to vote for him early in the game, but we didn't know at the time the way we know now that voters were looking for something different, and that's why I think Bernie could have won at this stage. Looking back, I think Bernie could have won in the same way that the unlikely Trump won, because people had had enough of the quote establishment. You're looking at me, Teresa. Tony says, why are you reminding everyone not to look directly at the sun at any time during an eclipse? It's only during the totality that one can safely look, and we are not in that region. Remind them to take selfies with the sun as it could not to take selfies with the sun as it could damage and burn out the lens system on the phone. Personally, I don't think Trump will say that he's not running for re-election tonight. I was sort of joking about that, folks. Unless he can find a way to make it look like he's the winner, which he is not. And if he does, what will he do with all the money he's raising for re-election? In peace, Dr. Tony.
I know this is for his legal defense fund.
I know this isn't that important, but I was just thinking about, imagine the difference with Barack Obama in the White House with the eclipse as opposed to with Trump. I mean, he just so embraced science. You know that NASA has all sorts of amazingly wonderful activities for kids and others around this. Plus, they have enormous amounts of science that's going on in relation to this. It's incredible what's going on in relation to this, and we have a president who rejects science.
He doesn't think it's happening. So,
Rami says... Oh, no, it's Rose. No, I'm so sorry. It's Rosemary. Alan is right. There was a lot of resistance to Hillary, and she was a flawed candidate. The DNC overwhelmingly supported her and fought the Bernie movement, but there were many of us Bernie supporters who very reluctantly voted for her. Count me as one who continued to count, standing by her man as the first of her many decisions to advance her ambitions above doing what is right, example for young girls. Well, what's the matter? You're looking confused. She's saying there were many people who thought many women in particular, who thought that she should not have stood by his man. Her man. But I happen to agree with, I happen to agree that she should have, but who knows? We'll never know.
And there's some people who think, well, I don't even want to go down that road.
Nurse Carol, I heard this AM that the Secret Service has already blown through their budget for protecting the president and his extended family. Is there any way to pull this back? I'm outraged that the Trump proclivity for excess is now being visited on me and other hardworking taxpayers. I am disgusted. Good morning, Alan. I know that you do not need nor seek my approval. I must say your comments this morning were very encouraging. Your insight and pragmatic speculation was well stated, and you have chosen to find the good in the Bannon's ousting and the, quote, hope of positive, stronger force of people who will help this country through the Trump presidency was extremely refreshing to hear from you. P.S. I am no Trump fan, but to hear your colleagues continue to push back as you articulated the potential for a positive change in direction was disheartening but typically expected. All right. Good morning, panel. My real concern about Bannon is that he had a high security clearance as well as access to a president who likes to brag and gloat about what he knows and does. Bannon took that information out of the gates of the White House and right through the doors of Breitbart. Scary. And that's from Kathy.
And not to mention, you know, Cambridge Analytica and all the other groups that he's associated with. And he and a number of other people there who have security clearances, I don't understand how they got them. I don't understand how Jared Kushner got his. I don't understand how the... Anyway.
Remember when they put Bannon on the security group?
Yeah, that was...
And that was really frightening.
Yeah. We're out of time.
No.
Thanks to everyone for...
The show should be 2 hours.
And...
Dick Gregory.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, Dick Gregory, Jerry Lewis, we didn't get to that, but so there have been some wonderful obituaries.
Rest in peace.
I never learned hate at home or shame. I had to go to school for that. Dick Gregory.
We'll end there. Alan, Teresa, Libby, thank you very much. We'll be back right after this.